This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Thank you for being here this afternoon, October 1st, and State Senator Floyd Przanski. Thank you for being on today's program.
Carl, thank you very much for having me.
And as we get started, just want to remember, of course, we've talked about it since yesterday, and I think it's just wrapping up now, Umpqua Community College, the Day of Remembrance going on out at the school.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to comment. You know, this is really a sad day for all of us, even 6 years later, to think as to what happened back in 2015 on October 1st. As I mentioned to you, I was actually at the Capitol in the meeting with the superintendent of the state police when he was called out regarding a situation. None of us realized what was happening until he came back in the room and expressed his dismay and the shock of what had just occurred at UCC. And, of course, that changed all of our days at that moment, and many of us, you know, were able to get down to the school later that day. But I think it's one of these times that we need to recognize and remember the survivors and, unfortunately, the victims of the situation and their families. And I hope that all of us will take that in our prayers tonight. And for those who weren't able to make it to the memorial today, to be able to just pause and think and reflect on the impact of our community.
And I know as well, if it's not already, the YouTube presentation will be archived and be available later for folks to check out as well. So let's talk about the special session last week. We talked about it once as it was kind of in the midst of things. Let's talk about the fallout after Speaker Kotek pulled back from the earlier kind of bipartisan power sharing agreement. Where did things go from there?
Well, everything just went to a freeze frame. I mean, it was one of those scenarios that many of us, as I expressed last time I was on the air, I was somewhat surprised and dismayed as to how that announcement was made. Clearly, when you, after you get through that process and you start hearing other perspectives, maybe there was reason for her to do what she did, but the way it was handled was not, from my perspective, appropriate or didn't really clear the air as to why she was making the change that she was making. You know, the reality is that it's very tense when you, unfortunately, this only happens once every 10 years with redistricting, but a lot of people have a lot of emotion and expression as to what they think should happen or shouldn't happen, and it's one of those situations that it doesn't always work out the way any of us would want it to, but it is important to acknowledge that in 2011, as well as this year, 2021, that the legislature did, in fact, perform its duty, that we were, in fact, able to come up with maps, even though some will disagree with what the maps ended up as. But the reality, the legislature did its part. It did send out measures to the governor. The governor did sign the bills that were passed on Monday of this week. So the secondary fallback will not occur, meaning legislative maps will not go to the Secretary of State. And the new formula of a fallback to the five-judge panel for the congressional ones. So I'm pleased that we as a legislature were, in fact, able to do our work this time as we did 10 years ago. But I do know that there's a lot of people still having, let's say, second thoughts or concerns about how the maps were actually drawn.
So let's talk about, as we were early in the week, if I recall correctly, you can certainly correct me, the Senate had already voted on the proposal, but before the House could move forward, we had the what you might call the COVID pause.
Yes. So if you remember, for the listeners, and on Monday the 20th of September is when we were all called in for a special session to deal with the redistricting issue. The three bills that were necessary for the session, two of them are being the maps and the other one being the way you close down a session, all started in the Senate. And so the Senate had their committee that was the redistricting committee that was meeting, had five individuals that were part of that committee, and they reported out the maps that were voted on by the Senate on the floor that day. Now, the bills were Senate Bill 881, which was the congressional map, and then Senate Bill 882, which is the legislative boundary map for the state legislature. When we completed that, then we had a third bill, which is known as the Sine-Die bill, and this is the bill that basically exits us out of the session. And the Senate did, in fact, pass that as well. Now, what happens after that is everything went over to the House for them to consider and to make any amendments and or passage of the bills. And this is where things kind of got thrown off on a kind of a circle, where it's the announcement of the forming of two committees on the House, where there was only one. First, it looked like there was only going to be an addition of two individuals, one Republican, one Democrat, to the original redistricting committee. But then we got the Speaker's announcement that she was actually breaking out the congressional map and redistricting to a separate group from the one that was dealing with both of them at one time. That caused a lot of concern, pain, and excitement within the House, as well as on the Senate, because we're now just watching it, because we had completed the work that we were charged to do. Without going into great details, the emotional breakdowns that occurred, as you mentioned, that as they were trying to negotiate and try to figure out how to pick up the pieces and move forward, whether or not individuals were going to show up or to give a quorum, the House was trying to meet, and they were in recess, and then it turned out that someone came out and was identified as a positive for COVID, which in that case, that situation basically really shut down the process in the House, and I believe that was on a Wednesday of last week when that occurred, and they decided that they were going to wait for 2 days, which turned out to be Saturday, to be the day to come back in to allow those members who had direct contact with the infected individual to be able to have tests done and determine whether or not they needed to quarantine, etc. They were scheduled to meet on Saturday. Then they changed it to Monday of this week. And then at that point, the President of the Senate already made a determination that he was going to have the Senate members there on Monday of this week. So if there was going to be a change in either of the two maps, and specifically at that time the focus was on the congressional map, that we would have the ability to act on it, because that Monday of this week was the deadline for the legislature to act under the special order of the Oregon Supreme Court. So we were there on Monday. The House came in, and they came in earlier, and they were able to work through the differences, make a change, a somewhat significant change on the congressional map, and then we had to basically approve those changes, and then we were able to exit out with the completion of the work on both the House and the Senate side.
And that pretty much passed on party lines, right?
It did, and this is a part that's kind of interesting. If anyone was interested in looking and listening to the video and the that was from the floor sessions, I think what you could take away is that most people were fine and pretty well satisfied with the overall drawing of the legislative maps for the state redistricting. That kind of came through based on statements that were made from people from both parties on the floor. But then there was a party line vote. So I read into the stuff around the state redistricting that even though Republicans locked down and voted no, many of them expressed, satisfaction or willingness to accept the maps as they were drawn, as compared to maybe where the negotiations had been during that 5-week period that they were meeting to try to come up with a resolution.
All right, more on this when we come back with State Senator Floyd Prezanski. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245, News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1247. Lars Larson at 1. Umpqua Valley Live, looking at arts, entertainment, community activities. That's part of KQEN Local Talk at 4. And then on Mondays, Inside Douglas County, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer will be back with another look through the COVID-19 situation. State Senator Floyd Prezanski on with us now, talking about the recent special session of the legislature and the redistricting issue. As I've talked to a number of folks from both parties in the past few days, certainly Republicans I've talked to had, as you mentioned, the biggest problem with the congressional district maps. And I'm curious what you thought about those maps. First of all, there was one proposal on them, and then that got shifted. As they stand now, do you think they were drawn up fairly?
I think they're as fair as they can be under the circumstances that we're dealing with. The original map that was actually passed by the Senate on the 20th, so a week ago Monday, definitely looked pretty different compared to what we have now, because the Congressional District 3 was taking in parts of actually Portland proper and going up the gorge to Hood River and basically coming back down and actually into Deschutes County. And so it's kind of a wraparound, kind of a slight L upside down. And, I mean, I think for a lot of people that was a kind of hard to understand how that map could be drawn in such a way. That was the hang-up that we talked about over the week, that the House was in disarray. And when they basically came back, they looked at some alternatives, and they came up with a map that was passed by the House and then the concurrence vote to pass it on the Senate, which really reflects that CD3 is now going to be limited to parts of Portland, Multnomah County, Clackamas County, and Hood River, where it was going in to take in part of Wasco, Jefferson, and Deschutes. The change that has occurred is that on the what is called the Congressional 5th District is the district south of Portland. That one is taking in parts of Clackamas County, Marion County, Linn County, and then it actually jumps over the Cascades and picks up part of Deschutes County, including Benn. And if I got this correct, I believe some of the outskirting communities of Redmond and maybe Prineville. So the real issue for us is that the population requirements, and on the federal side, you literally have to be within 5 residents differences from between each of the districts. On the House side, it's up to it worked out to about 300 people difference, but federal maps, it's very, very strict that they are almost one for one. And if I'm correct on this, I believe of the 6 districts, the variance is only up to 2 people difference between the 6 congressional districts.
Now, after the process was done, House Leader Christine Drazen sort of alluded to the potential that this proposal, or what is now has been approved, would not survive court challenges. So she didn't actually say there would be a challenge. What have you heard?
I expect there definitely will be a challenge on the congressional. This is something above and beyond us in Oregon. This is a national scenario that both major parties, Republicans and Democrats, are fighting tooth and nail across the country. Wherever the congressional districts are being shifted from and going into a new state, such as Texas is picking up 2 congressional districts. We've picked up 1. Of course, that's a population shift throughout this country that basically Oregon has grown that much. So, yes, I expect that you will see an official challenge through the court system on the congressional redistricting map.
Now, court cases can take time, and especially if it goes from one level to another. How might this impede the beginning of the 2022 election cycle?
Well, my understanding is most of this stuff will be expedited pretty quickly and will be addressed. Now, I don't know what the defaults are as to if it's still in litigation as to the impact on our elections cycle or dates. I have not looked at that, but I would expect that we will have decisions made. The actual signing up to run for a particular office in a particular district That has all been delayed as on the redistricting year. So normally you'd have that occurring right now in the non-redistricting year. But this year, those people who would like to be running for offices will have until sometime in February. That's when you can start signing up for running for a House seat, Senate seat, or congressional. But then I think the cutoff date is like the second week of March, if I'm not mistaken.
Now, obviously, the Republicans have been talking about the idea that this should be done by an independent body. But that's also come from some other nonpartisan political groups, other organizations, really from both sides of the aisle, who have said this process shouldn't be done by people that can be so directly impacted by it.
Well, I mean, that's an argument that is out there and has been. I mean, there's many people say, well, we need, quote unquote, an independent agency or independent group making these decisions. Well, how do you define independent? And how do you determine whether someone is truly independent? I mean, are you not going to know what their party affiliation is, which you will know because if they're registered to vote, that's declared as to how they are aligning themselves. So there's been other states that have taken this approach, and there's been some states that actually have walked away from that. The most recent one that we had that was being considered for us was not able to get the signatures necessary to move forward a measure. I understand that there may already be a new measure being drafted for citizen consideration in the 2022 election cycle if they're able to get the necessary signatures to have the initiative move forward for a vote of the people.
So talk about how your district boundaries will change because of this.
Considerably. This is not my first time to go through a redistricting, but this is one that's definitely going to be very significant for the district I currently represent will be modified significantly. The House district that I reside in would be paired with the House district that includes Springfield. I basically would lose all of my district I currently have that includes all of Douglas County that I currently represent. I would not be representing any of Douglas County under the current legislative maps. And again, we have to look at the reason for those changes is based on the population shift. When you look at the state of Oregon and you look at how the census came back, many of the counties in southern Oregon had losses of population, or let's say they didn't have the equal amount to be considered as a new district under the new census. The shift of population was in the Tri-County area, Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington, as well as Deschutes County. So the drafters and the committees, when they were looking through how best to redraw the maps, chose to use a process that has been used in the past, and that is starting at the southern boundary of Oregon, up against California, and moving forward and gaining the population that was lacking to get them up to the level of being enough people in a district to be a House district. That's how we do our redistricting, is figure out the boundaries for the 60 House seats. Once that is done, then there is a pairing of two House seats to be one Senate seat, and the primary requirement there is that they have to be contiguous, so they have to be border-to-border touching in some way. And so the way this is set up now, the remainder of the district I currently represent, that's a good portion of rural Lane County, Cottage Grove, and working to the east, Oak Ridge, up into the McKenzie Valley area, would become a separate district. And my district would not be even close enough to be tied to a House district in Douglas County.
Now, when will this take effect?
Well, it will be in effect for the 2022 election cycle. And so that's why people cannot be signing up for seeking office for a particular district, because at this point we don't know where the districts actually are going to be until We go through the full formal proceedings, which is any appeals that could be filed against the maps that were approved by the state legislature by the governor.
At this point, then, you're still representing the folks in the section of Douglas County you do now until early next year.
Yeah. I missed the question on that. Yeah, all of us who are currently serving continue to serve and represent the district that we currently represent. And so, yes, I still represent Douglas County and Lane County as Senate District 4 sits right now.
All right, we'll watch the process as things unfold. State Senator Floyd Prusansky, thanks for being on.
Kyle, thank you very much. Hope you have a good afternoon.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.